This is News in No Time. Ed Gordon on today's roundtable, attention to Darfur and terror around the world. Joining us today from our New York bureau, Robert George, editorial writer at the New York Post, and Marcelo Suarez Orozco, professor of globalization and education and co-director of immigration studies at New York University. Also with us, Callie Crossley, social and cultural commentator of the television show Beat the Press, seen in the Boston area. She joins us from the Harvard University studios in Cambridge. I welcome you all and thank you. Let's talk a little bit about what we saw in terms of a march, Robert George, in the streets. So much attention being paid to the immigration march, rightfully so, today. But over the weekend, we saw thousands rally in support of trying to stop the violence in Darfur and the Sudan. And interestingly enough, as much attention has really been focused over the last week because George Clooney has become involved. Let's play a little clip from Mr. Clooney and then we'll get into it.
We're at the doorstep of something we thought was impossible to dream of in the 21st century. If we turn our heads and look away and hope that it'll all disappear, then they will. All of them, an entire generation of people, and we will have only history left to judge us.
Talking about what many people are calling the genocide there, talk to us, A, about the inclusion of a superstar like George Clooney to something like this.
Well, it certainly gives a situation that has been obviously been growing over the last 2 years now. It brings so much more public attention to it. I mean, I don't think, obviously with the numbers that were showing up on the mall over the weekend, it would have gotten some news coverage. But obviously, George, you know, sexiest man alive, Clooney, Academy Award winner, it brings a lot more focus to it. But, I mean, you know, the fact is, there have been a number of people who have been talking about this on the left and the right for quite some time, and particularly even some of the strongest conservatives in Congress, like Senator Sam Brownback in Kansas, Representative Chris Smith in New Jersey. If Clooney's name can actually, you know, force some real attention to it, great.
Here's what's interesting to me, Professor, the idea that sometimes you have dueling interests. And we're starting to see that kind of thing in the streets. We have the battle over illegal immigration. We have Darfur. You're starting to see people concerned about, obviously, the war in Iraq. Can that be problematic?
I'm not sure it can be problematic. I think that these are issues that increasingly call forth a more coordinated, more coherent set of responses. I think that celebrities put aside the crisis in the Darfur as one of the great humanitarian crises in the world today. 200,000 ethnically motivated killings, 2 million displaced refugees seeking shelter. This clearly calls forth a major international agenda where we need to really coordinate our efforts with the African Union, with our colleagues in Europe, Russia, China. This is really beyond celebrity here.
But the sense of each march starts to compete, as Robert said, for airtime, space in the newspaper, people's attention. And if you've got anti-war march going on over here, illegal immigration march going on over here, stopping violence in Darfur going on over here, sometimes one might believe that people will start to say, okay, you know, that's just too much marching.
But there's a common thread that's going on here. I'm sure Callie can speak to this, too. There's a real common thread about America and its role in the world and what America is going to look like and how it's going to react to what people have referred to, not just the browning of the America, but the browning of the world right now.
Callie, let me ask you this, and then Marcelo can follow up. What's interesting, too, is the browning of the celebrity or lack thereof. There are a lot of African-Americans who are suggesting, where are the black superstar celebrities and other people of color on the front of this? If you see Clooney bringing attention to Darfur, if you see Angelina Jolie bringing attention to the plight of African nations and the problems that, in fact, they're having with everything from education to just livelihood and rape. We've seen Oprah do some things, but many people feel that African-American celebrities have not stepped up enough.
Well, I don't think that's true, but I need to say first that I believe that Americans, and that's what we're known for, can multitask when it comes to justice. And
yeah,
to,
that's what we're
to,
known
to
for.
Social
I don't know how well
issues.
We do it, but we're known
well,
for
Well, I mean, that's the whole question about multitasking in general. But what I mean is that we can hold more than one thought about the various issues going on in the world. And Robert is right about how America is to be involved in the world globally, but also about how do we as Americans really want to articulate what we say is democracy and morality, really. So that's the first thing. The second thing is there have been folks out in front, Don Cheadle among them. He's written several op-eds. He's visited the Sudan. People have raised their voices. But when it comes to who takes up the airspace, if you mm-hmm. will, there are some, quote, white celebrities, for lack of a better expression, who will always get that attention. And one of the reasons they're going to get the attention is because right now so much what is called news is really stories that are seen through an entertainment frame. Mm-hmm. And to their credit, Clooney especially, and Jolie, both have said, we know that people are coming to us for other stuff, but we're going to take the platform and use it for something positive. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's why, he's out there in front doing it. But there are certainly black folks who are there. And I would like to add that a Boston-based physician, Dr. Gloria White Hammond, is executive director of A Million Voices of Darfur, black woman. Part of her role is to engage regular black folks into the struggle, and she's done that very well. But you just don't see that and hear that in the coverage sometimes.
I think another issue running through this is the lack of political leadership and therefore the vacuum that
across,
this
the
is
board.
Across the board in all of these three issues that we're talking about. And therefore a vacuum is being generated that is being taken up by the celebrities.
Obama was at the Darfur.
Well, certainly. And I mean, when we talk about this, obviously they're going to be politicians. They're going to be black celebrities. We're going to be, it is just a generality that people start to whisper, where are these people? All right. Let's turn our attention to something particularly based on the idea of today and the illegal immigration boycott that we're seeing. And here is one of the fears that Americans have and don't say out loud or perhaps in mixed company, and that is that the Spanish language is becoming so strong in the United States that there are those kind of xenophobia fears that it's taking over and soon we'll all have to know Spanish, etc. We heard a British music producer produce a Spanish language version of the United States national anthem, and it really met with a lot of criticism. Let's take a listen real quick. Marcelo, let me go to you. When you hear this, and I know that you've had many, many conversations about this kind of thing, and there are these whispers and a couple of brave people who may come out front and suggest that they believe that people should speak English in the United States and only speak English. What do you say to that?
Sure. Immigrants today, including Spanish-speaking immigrants, are learning English faster and better than in any previous generation of in the history of immigration to the United States. The data on this are overwhelming. Really, the issue becomes one, will Spanish be the general exception to what has been a rule in the history of immigration to the United States? One of my colleagues at Harvard once said, the U.S. is a cemetery for languages. The Germans brought their language, the Japanese brought their language, the Italians brought their language. All of those languages were buried in the United States. Over time, there is a very powerful movement towards English supremacy for all groups. I think that what we're witnessing today is a kind of a new dynamic. Let's call it a bilingualism from below and a bilingualism from the top. The president can have it both ways. He can't give his radio speech address in Spanish. He can't crack jokes in Spanish. He can't go into Spanish whenever he sees it a political opportunity, and at the same time be concerned when people take these messages of civic engagement seriously and engage in these kinds of issues like the national anthem in Spanish.
Callie, here's the interesting point. With situations like this, could we see this as a positive in terms of bringing the United States kicking and screaming into the 21st century when we know that most of the world is bilingual?
Well, absolutely. But with regard to the national anthem, the problem is that it's a symbol that's bigger than just a language issue, or that people will try to frame it as such. And so people are very insulted that, you know, nobody wants to sing in English, which is not the point. But here's what I find interesting. It's been pointed out to me that the State Department on its website has a Spanish a translation of the Star-Spangled Banner. So I don't know what that's about. So now they're objecting to this wholly new song. I think if the song didn't sound so much like the original national anthem, there would maybe be less pushback. And I'm thinking about the Negro National Anthem, which is about cultural pride. It's about being here, but it also is referred to as a national anthem. But it's totally different sounding and different in focus and intent than the national anthem. So I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking this is the tip of the iceberg about backlash in general. But I also think that there was a way maybe to do the same thing without you borrowing so heavily from the original.
Well,
that
but
maybe
this essentially is a Spanish
people.
Version of the national anthem, unlike
that's
the Negro national anthem, which is a completely different song.
Right. Yeah.
That's my point exactly. And I said, if it wasn't that, then I maybe wouldn't have experienced so much the backlash.
It's a Spanish version, but however, speaking to, in Callie's word, the backlash that we are starting to see on the immigration issue, which is why, you know, a number of people said, you know, having the boycott may not be a good idea. There's an element within the country, that feels that it's not just a matter of immigrants, you know, coming in and taking jobs. It's quote taking the culture unquote. And the national anthem, you know, like the Pledge of Allegiance, is one of these really strongly symbolic things. It's supposed to be a unifying element. And there's this sense that if people start saying it in Spanish, it becomes more divisive. I think clearly, if this is not something that's going to be done, at sports events and things like that, I think ultimately this particular issue will fade away.
All right, let's turn our attention to a report released by the United States government, and that is on terrorist attacks across the world. 11,000 terrorist attacks were carried out last year, killing more than almost 14,500 people. The majority of these attacks, Marcelo, happened in Iraq. That's an interesting juxtaposition with what we're finding in terms of the war on terror and those attacks happening in the country that we are at war with.
Beyond the green zone, there is really very little monopoly of security in Iraq today, and that's why we see the kind of explosion in the number of attacks that are, again, marked by religious groupings between the Shia, the Kurd, and the Sunni. This really suggests that we have very little control of the state apparatus in Iraq. There hasn't really been the ability of the U.S. to act as a warrantor of peace and security, and this really suggests the beginning of the real disintegration of that country.
Here's the other interesting point, Callie, when you talk about terrorist attacks in the general term and the war on terror waged by the Bush administration. Much of what is forgotten in all of this by Americans is all of this is new to our shores, but the rest of the world has lived with this, unfortunately, for years and years and years.
You're absolutely right. And I think that's one of the reasons why maybe we don't get the same kind of intense response, though I think you're seeing more of it, witness the march against the war here over the weekend, from Americans, because it feels very distant. And that's the advantage that we've had through all of this. I think the point here, though, is that what does it mean that our very presence in a country seems to inspire more terrorist attacks? I mean, there was the heaviest toll of deaths this past month and has been since last year. And all you see is just it just seems to be draining away resources, lives primarily. And to what point? Our presence seems to be inspiring the terrorism. I don't see an end to it. And I think that's the problem about the war and its message from the Bush administration and, this, and our support of it, rather. And I don't know how you explain that away to folks.
Right. And Kelly, I guess, she actually meant it's the last month we had the highest number of actual American casualties specifically in Iraq. Yeah. The nub of the problem is in the way that Ed, you just described it. You know, you said most of these attacks are happening in the country that we're at war with. The weird question is, you know, are we still at war with Iraq? We are in some kind of a war and an ongoing conflict in Iraq, but you know, we're supporting the government there, and there's this obviously this internecine battle that we increasingly seem to be caught in the middle of, and the insurgency unfortunately does not seem to be under control as much as the administration would want, and you also had Colin Powell again coming out this weekend and criticizing the troop issue. So,
isn't Marcelo that the interesting point, almost the surreal point of what's going on in that country now? We have the United States military apparatus, the biggest and the baddest in the world, fighting insurgents, trying to install a government and still having problems. And as Robert just suggested, it's the bloodiest month that we've seen since the war began.
Yeah, language fails us again because this has moved beyond the war theater and it's become now a classic counterinsurgency operation. And the evidence seems to suggest that we simply didn't prepare for that scenario, for that theater. So we went in with a set of variables, with a set of constants, and now we are needing to manage a completely different situation on the ground, and this is generating very, very destructive results.
And you also had the first successful suicide bombing in Israel for the first time in many, many months as well, just as Hamas has taken control. So the idea of the democratization project that the administration has been trying to work on has had serious setbacks in the last 6 weeks.
And Callie, with about 30 seconds, the other fight is that the military doesn't really want to look at. They claim that this is a ragtag bunch of insurgents, but if you just saw this month being the bloodiest, one would have to ask about the U.S. military and their might and their readiness, and that, as we've already stated, is being brought up.
Well, not only that, but the Iraqis that they have been training, they just had an incident over there where they wanted to assign them to different parts of Iraq, and the folks that have been trained now, these are the people who are supposed to be ready to go and take up the space for the Americans, said they only wanted to stay close to home. So it's, I mean, you know, they themselves don't want to be dispersed throughout the country because they don't feel it's safe. So
All right.
It's quite a mess.
All right, Callie, Marcelo, and Robert, thank you so much. Greatly appreciate it.